Claire Collins woke up in Mount Druitt. Claire Collins woke up in Mount Druitt in her mother's house, with George napping next to her, too quietly for senility, unless he had died, and the sounds of her mother and baby, Corbin, in the lounge room, watching their favourite series, Turn the Screw Softly, a sitcom pirated by her mother and still set in a women's prison, which no one ever left, as Claire had remarked to George earlier, not even the screws. Corbin, with his beautiful tact, laughed a second after Coral. He enjoyed reinforcing any sort of happiness, especially that of his puzzling grandmother, and was always well-intentioned, sensitive and moral, thought Claire. She thought that she could remember being like that too when three, like him, but she didn't think Corbin would ever suffer her own mute, rigid explosion into murder, that strange mingling of empathies and jealousies, efficient acceptance of failure. It was now late October and she and George were resting, unable to travel overseas because of COVID restrictions and because they were unfathomably weary, angry, wanted home. She was neatly arranging Libyan and Syrian refugees in and out of their quarantines on the phone. Their main terror wasn't ASIO, but the many brands of ISIS Western governments had sponsored and who had been evacuated to Western cities, still slaughtering the occasional teacher or artist they considered infidel, and still a threat always to those genuinely in exile. The jihadis had just sliced the head off a Paris history teacher, and Claire knew the refugees needed extra care, knew that innate panic crossed all oceans and borders with the suddenness of fire. George was sleeping in a fetal position she considered sexy, since he still curled firmly around her dreamt body. He had been awake in the watches of the night, as Donald Trump had called him once again for advice, or maybe just practical, gruff sympathy, as they agreed on almost nothing, except that George was anti-global and that troops should be withdrawn from everywhere. Claire asked, "Where is he this time?" George scrutinised the laptop. It seems to be a golf course in Wisconsin. He's still sweaty after a campaign rally, but at least he's got a mask. Trump seemed to hear and see that. "I only take it off if I can't breathe, George." Claire had wrapped herself up in the doona. Trump nodded politely in her direction. Again, she was surprised by the soft, diffident, boyish tenor of his voice. George asked, "How did the rally go?" "Great, they sang and I danced. I didn't feel that I was going to win, but I didn't feel that last time either, as you know. Are you still angry about the way that I assassinated Soleimani?" "You know it wasn't really because he insulted me on Twitter. But I needed Adelson's campaign funding, and this way we'll be chucked out of the Middle East at last. It's chess." Claire muttered as directed by Igmar Bergman, but George insisted tiredly. "He was your best champion to fight the jihadis that Obama funded. You are playing chess too much against the truth." In Claire's drowsing brain, the truth on the other side of the chessboard blended into a skull in a monk's cowl, but George had woken up and laughed. Trump liked that male laughter. He had been happy at the military academy. There was something sort of soldierly about George, but more so about his partner, whom Trump thought of as a silver blonde in the blanket. She was quite a scary little thing. Trump asked, "George, on election night, will you still be there and watching? I'll Skype you if I can sometimes as the states come in." Behind him, the nurtured turf of Emerald, Wisconsin, lay too groomed to quiver in a healthy autumn breeze. George had grinned. "Yes, keep in touch. I'm staying at the best place to be Skyped, the world's future again." Now Claire this morning drifted her small fingers across his waking head. She said, "Put on your mask and we'll take Corbin shopping, as the child will love the masks as much as the outing, and indeed, like all innocents, thinks masks are a great game."